Back at it. It's the news, according to me. It's good to be back in the home studio. Well, not the home studio. I always say a home studio, the home base, the institution here. That is the fine facilities here at the. What does Rush call his thing? Institute for Excellence Broadcasting or something like that. Excellent, something like EIB Network. This is the. This is the Institute for something. IFS. Institute for something. That's what it is. we're just going to call it that. We just made that up. You guys are right here in the midst of creativity. Watching it happen, listening to it happen. I guess you're not really watching. Well, if you're looking at your device that you're listening to, I guess you're watching it. You're just not able to see anything much more than just, you know, the words coming out of the box are the more, you know, are really the only thing that's happening. But hey, you know, if that's what you do, that's what you do. I'm not going to, you know, who am I to judge? Well, everybody, you know who I am. So I have some sweet tea here I happened to stop by a McDonald's. I rarely stop at McDonald's anymore. That's not that I'm, you know, if you do that, that's fine. That's your business. There's a comedian I used to like. Don't like him so much anymore because of some political statements he made. However, he's really funny, and he used to talk about this. He has this whole routine on McDonald's. He says, you know, nobody will admit to going to McDonald's, but they serve like 20 billion people a year. Somebody's going. So, yeah, people go to McDonald's far more often than they like to admit, I think. I only go, I think this year total, this entire year so far, 2021, I believe I've been to McDonald's twice, maybe. Once for sure, because I just went there today. I can't remember any other time this year that I've gone to McDonald's. I typically go to Chick-fil-A if I can. I go to Arby's quite a bit. The old roast beef sandwich thing seems to be a fairly healthy choice. I do go to Culver's. For those of you who don't know where that is or who what that is, it's mostly Midwest. They are rapidly expanding across the country, but I have to say, Culver, the quality of the food is much better, let alone the service. I mean, the service is good too, but they typically have higher standards than a lot of the fast food chains. They have better quality of food, I think. I know Chick-fil-A tends to have better quality, better product, extremely good service. And I would say Culver's is right up there with them in terms of quality of food and the service is very, very good as well. McDonald's is kind of a crapshoot. Depends on where you are in the country, what kind of service you're going to get, and even the, you know, the way they put the ketchup on the sandwich. But it seems like McDonald's has some things on the menu are okay, and but there's a lot of things I just don't know. I know that they put a lot of sugar and high fructose corn syrup and a lot of stuff. It's just a lot of processed food, and they have to. The volume that they're putting out has to be. It's just incredible. It's an amazing process. Don't get me wrong. I'm impressed with the ability to serve, you know, 20 billion people a day or whatever they do. It's some kind of ridiculous number of people. There's, you know, there's only, what, 8 billion people in the world, in the planet. So that there's, I don't know if there's aliens dropping in or what, but they're serving a lot of people and whatever else they're serving there. So that's the show. That's all I've got for today. There's all this stuff's going on. I talked a little about a few things this morning. I realized that looking at the numbers, it looks like quite a few people tuned into this morning's show. Apparently doing the recording, getting my broadcast out at by about 7 o'clock in the morning apparently seems to help listenership. So I may think about doing that more in the future. But I've been getting up at like 3 o'clock in the morning the last 4 days, and that ain't going to happen all the time. That just ain't gonna happen. Now, since I've been getting up that early, I probably will wake up earlier tomorrow morning, which means I will probably be able to get things done. Now, part of the issue is, I can get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and get the thing done, the show, the thing, whatever. But unfortunately, my computer, my internet, I should say, my internet system, it goes from, I have 150 MPS, whatever it is. Is it MPS? MPS. Megabits per second or whatever it is. And that's pretty fast. I mean, it works really fast. And I can upload the show in, I can upload an hour-long show in a minute or less. However, I run into a problem when the first day of, what I get is 15 gigabytes per month of doing that. That's all I get. And once that 15 gigabytes is used, it drops down to about 0.038 MPS. Yeah, so it takes about 2 hours to upload my show instead of a minute. At least it seems that way to me. That's been my experience. It seems a bit ridiculous. So I went into the Verizon store. My service provider is Verizon. And I chatted with a couple individuals, told them about all the stuff I do, and they worked out a plan that looks like, for about the same amount of money, just a little bit less, apparently. I think that they may have calculated some things wrong, because I don't think that this is possible. But they worked it out so that I can establish a different kind of account, and I can up my gigabytes. See, I've got 15 gigs at my house. I've got 15 gigs at my office. And typically, I don't go through the whole, I don't burn through the 15 gigs at my office very quickly. But the first day at home, usually, if my wife does a lot of video conferencing, she sometimes she works from home, and that her computer just has to sync with the mainframe computer at her office. And it tends to, if it's updating anything, it just eats it up real fast. And it doesn't do it every day, but just when, it just happens to do it on certain days. It'll just be gone in a day. And that's just not acceptable, because then it slows down for her. She, everything gets really slow, and then that gets slow for everything. And it's kind of annoying. So then usually I get through about half a month with mine, typically, unless something updates or I want to update a program or software or something, then that shoots it pretty much right away. I think I'm going to be talking to him tomorrow. I talked to him last week. I'm going to be talking to them again tomorrow and tomorrow morning, actually. And hopefully we can get this ironed out, and I will end up with super mega fast, lots of gigs, and Googie Jigs, and all the other gigabytes and all the other things that they sell me. I'll be walking out the door with a big bag full of gigabytes, I think is what I'm going to do. And I'll be able to use those. I'll be able to throw gigabytes into everything and make it work faster. So that's my plan for tomorrow. You won't hear me complaining anymore until that becomes a problem. And it's only going to cost me about $3,000 a month more. No, not quite that much. Actually, it's almost the same price. It's just a little bit more, I think, unless they quoted me wrong the first time I was in there. And I have the feeling they left out a $100 charge. Looking at it again, I was like, there should be a charge here. And I don't think they put it on there. So now maybe they're not going to charge me that. I don't know how it's going to work. So we'll just have to see how that works. If they'll let me try it for 30 days, I'll give it a whirl, see how it works. And if it doesn't work, I'm going to go back to what I had until I figure out something else to do. I might have to get cable. There's just no other way to look at it. I may have to get some kind of cable data, something, and that'll probably cost $1 million. But the kind of revenue that this show generates, I have to have something faster, because there's just the money is flowing. I got dollars waiting on dimes here, And gotta get one. So I want to wade into something. And I talked a little bit this morning about the Iowa election and how the disingenuous, evil individuals on the left are now doing the very same thing that they said that Donald Trump, all the Donald Trump supporters are guilty of. And they're insurrectionists for not, you know, for questioning anything about the election. If you question the election, you're racist. Because everything's racist. If they don't like what you're doing, you're racist. You're an insurrectionist racist. And so now they're doing this in Iowa. The election was certified. Everything was fine. Everything was recounted and canvassed and everything. The whole thing happened. And now she won by like 6 votes. And they want to reverse the results. Anything happens at all, they start crying voter disenfranchisement. They start crying gerrymandering. All kinds of issues. They'll come in there and sweep. They think they're going to take over from the federal office. These are the very same things that the Republicans wouldn't do because they said this is not in our position. We don't have the power. The states have the power of the election. Well, apparently not according to the Democrats. They don't have a problem going in and changing things. And that's exactly what they're planning on doing. And that's exactly what this bill was about that they introduced. And I'm shocked that Mitch McConnell now has, I saw some kind of a headline. I like to read headlines. I don't really read the reports too much. I just read the headlines and I make up in my head whatever the headlines say. Actually, if you do that, that's very dangerous. This is a disclaimer here. Because many times headlines are very deceptive. They will throw a headline out there. And you have to really watch some of the news networks that do this. And there are some networks I trust because the actual headline actually is what they say. Is actually what the body of the story is about. Typically, they will throw a headline out there that people will read, or they'll read the first paragraph of, but buried down inside the story is the actual truth. And it makes it sound like this is what's happening when it's not. Because they know that people only read, they don't usually click on more than one page. They'll read the first paragraph, and they'll usually draw you in by stopping in the middle of a paragraph and saying, click here to read more. I have to say, that annoys me to no end. I usually do not click on anything further because I know it's all about selling advertisement on a page. The more ads they have on that page and every click they get to that page, they can say, we have 10,000 hits on our pages. Yeah, because 1,000 people had to click 10 times to read a story. You didn't reach 10,000 people. They clicked on, we had 1,000 people that, out of the 10,000 people that did click on the first page, that looked at the first page, only 1,000 of them made it to the end. So it's, that's not the correct math, I'm sure, but that's gives you an idea. So I'll read through some headlines here. And McConnell, I'm actually going to go to this story and look at it because I might need to read some of this. It's kind of a complicated thing that's going on here. What happened to it now? It's not there. Yeah, that's nice. It just disappeared. Story is gone. Mitch McConnell, his little statement here. Let's see if I can find it again. Here, I'll click on it again and see if it actually goes to something or if it's just going to keep doing weird things. McConnell threatens scorched earth Senate if Democrats end filibuster. Republican leaders have long warned Democrats against ending the 60-vote threshold to pass legislation in the Senate. Now, this is the filibuster thing. It all has to do with they don't. That's not required if it is a budgetary. There's what they call budgetary reconciliation. It's kind of complicated, but there are some bills that come through the House, through the Senate, that do not have to be a two-thirds majority, a 60-vote majority. But most of them do. If it's a legal bill, it has to be 60 votes. Right now, there's a 50-50 number, if you want to call it that, if you can consider Romney and some of the others actual Republicans. However, the they have Carmella. She presides over the Senate. She's the president of the Senate, and she casts the tie-breaking vote. So, of course, they have 51 to 50 anytime they want it. And of course, McConnell thinks that they're somehow he has somehow still has some kind of power. I don't understand his logic there, because you got 50 people. Really, you got like 40, 45 maybe. And you still think you're wielding some kind of power. You got a bully pulpit, and you got the ability to talk out both sides of your mouth still. That's the power you've got. On Tuesday, Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, and I stress the word minority, emphasis mine, outlined the scorched earth path the GOP would take if Democrats carry out their threat to end the filibuster. It would shut down the Senate, McConnell warned. Quote,
nobody serving in this chamber can even begin to imagine what a completely scorched earth Senate would look like, end quote, the Kentucky Republican said, as you can tell by my impersonation.
The Kentucky Republican said on the Senate floor today, Tuesday, that would be today. McConnell threatened the possibility of complete gridlock on the floor, pointing out that the Senate runs by unanimous consent, which means all 100 senators must agree to the most basic terms of operating. Every move, he said, would require a vote if the full Senate, which is currently tied 50-50. Now, I don't think he understands. This is, I don't understand what's going through Mitch's head. And I don't know, here was a statement. Also in the article, Vice President Kamala Harris would not be permitted to break those tied votes, McConnell added. I want my colleagues to imagine a world where every single task requires a physical quorum, he said. Even the most basic aspects of our colleagues' agenda, the most mundane tasks of the Biden presidency, would be harder, not easier, for Democrats in a post-nuclear Senate. That's 50-50. Well, gee then, Mitch, why don't you just do it now? Why worry about it? Because if they had the opportunity to do it, they would do it. I guarantee you. You know they would. This is much like Israel. If Israel disarmed and gave away all their arms and put down their weapons, they would be in the ocean today. They would be wiped off the face of the earth. If everyone around Israel put down their weapons, things would stay the same. Israel has no interest in taking over its neighbors. This is much the same. The Republicans seem to think that Democrats are willing to negotiate. They don't negotiate. The only negotiation they know is you do what we want you to, or we call you a racist. We run you out of town. We hate the media to attack you. That's how this works, folks. So, Republicans seem to continue to forget that they're who they're playing with here. And it just drives me nuts. Just amazes me that they act this way. So, this being said, that's probably the main thing I was going to chat about with the current headlines. There was one other thing here. This is in the on the COVID front. And I would play the music here because I've got it right here, but I totally forgot that I have a music. It's right here. Speaking of COVID, it's out there and it's coming for you. This summer, in theaters near you. Hopefully theaters in some places have opened up. But I don't know if they've opened up in your area. Most theaters now are shut down or gone broke. I think we have limited seating, limited capacity or something still in our theaters here. As long as you're wearing that magic mask, you can wear that magic mask. You can do whatever you want, except have a barbecue on the 4th of July with some friends. Can't do that. Small groups. Yeah. That's if we do everything right. Maybe. Maybe we'll let you have a barbecue in your backyard. Maybe. If you behave. But don't count on it. Because Joe doesn't wear his mask all the time. And if he doesn't wear his mask, we're all going to get sick. So I guess Big Pharma now wants to, they're pushing for all kids, all children to get the vaccine. Kids. Now, understand, when this thing first came out, there was the initial thought was that this thing had about a 3% mortality rate, 3.4% mortality rate, which was an extremely high estimation. And here's the reason for that. The reason for that was because cases were unknown. We didn't realize how many cases there were. All we knew was the cases that were showing up at the hospital of sick people that were in bad shape. And of those people, 3.4% were dying. Now, when we started actually testing everybody, we started finding out that this thing was widespread. Many more cases than we thought. It dropped like a rock. The mortality rate ended up being, when we found out that people were getting it and not having really any symptoms at all, or very little symptoms, not even enough to see the doctor. Some people just thought they had a cold. And we all of a sudden find out that, oh, well, there's a lot more people that have it now. So now this changes the percentages. Right now, your percentage of the general population, this is everyone from little kids to 100-year-olds. If you include the entire population, the mortality rate is about 0.6%. And that's a high estimate. A lower estimate is actually the 0.4%. The common flu, the yearly flu, is about the same. Some years it's actually higher than that. It's closer to 1% some years. So you have to ask yourself. Now here's the other statistic that is just not talked about and is widely distorted. Children are by vast numbers are basically unaffected by this thing. The older population, if you are over 60 years old, now the mortality rate goes up exponentially by the time you get into the 70s and 80s. Because typically the reason for that is because people in that age group have developed comorbidities. So, and I heard a doctor today say, it's very clear, he made a really good point. He said, a comorbidity means you already have something you're dying from. And COVID is a comorbidity. In other words, COVID may have been the catalyst to bring about the issue earlier, because it attacks people who are weak in their immune system or have another issue. And now, granted, the flu will do the same thing. The flu kills many, many, many more young people, the young and the old, not the middle-aged, the folks, you know, up in their teens and into their middle-aged years, are pretty much unaffected by the common flu. It mostly attacks younger and older people. And again, it'll attack weaker people who have other comorbidities much quicker, much more than, and so it's the same type of demographic issue, or the issue there that is part of it, but it's not necessarily the, so the difference now, and when we're still locking down the country, now, of course, now there's these new strains, because there's new variants. that are more deadly? Well, they can be twice as deadly. And we're still talking about 0.8% to 1%. And I mean, that's deadly enough. Don't get me wrong. Any disease is horrible. Death in and of itself is horrible. The reason and the cause of death in our world is not because of God, by the way. It's because of man's disobedience to him. Now, we started this. Adam's to blame for all this stuff, and we're no better. So, it's, you know, the disobedience to God is what has ushered this into our world. Pestilence, disease, famine, all the bad things. That was not, wasn't in God's plan there. It wasn't his idea. So, but I won't get too deeply into the theological aspects of all that. Because I need to talk about something that's really important. That is, you know, The Bachelor. Yeah, I'm going to talk about this. I'm going to wade into this a little bit. Not because I don't ever watch the show, and I don't care about the show. But there's a principle here that I think we need to understand. And I'm going to wade into this, and I know it's a very controversial subject. And what I have to say about it could possibly get some people angry with me. However, it needs to be said, and I really hold fast to this truth, and I'm going to say something that probably will not go over well with some people, because there is this there is a particular mentality, especially within the church, that I think people have a hard time grasping these concepts sometimes. And I even see pastors who will say things or do things in their life. It's like, that is totally opposite of what Jesus taught. So here's the deal. So we have this issue where there was a Bachelor show, I guess, a season, whatever. A man of color was the bachelor, and this one, there was of course a bevy of women who are vying for his attention because they love him so much. It has nothing to do with their popularity on the show and their ability to win the contest. It's just all about the, you know, and the amount of time they spend on the show. They somehow fall madly in love with each other, and they're going to get married. So, for the world to see, it is absolutely pathetic. It's a pathetic show. And they get on this thing, and this one woman wins. She looks like she's going to be the one, the winner. The one. And so she gets, they find these pictures of her a few years ago in college of her dressed in a frat party. Is it a frat party or a sorority party? I guess it's a sorority for women. I don't know. I was never part of one of those. They wouldn't let me be one. In either one. Yeah, they wouldn't let me join either one. I tried. She apparently was dressed up as a Southern Belle. I guess that anything that has to do with the Old South is racist. Now, I get that doesn't apply towards the Democrats. The Democrats were the party of the South. I don't hear them at all. I always hear them. They never talk about their past. They never talk about their history and how they were the ones. Because they've gone, now they've gone the other direction. They're so busy covering up what they did and blaming somebody else. They don't want to talk about it. They were the party of the Ku Klux Klan. They were the party of the South. They were party of Jim Crow. They were the party segregation. They fought for things in the Congress. They were opposed to the Civil Rights Bill. Now to hear them talk, you'd think that they were all marching. They were all marching for civil rights. They were all crossing the bridge to Thelma. All that stuff. They were all about that. They were not. So really, I would say the Democrats are all racist because of their past, where they came from. If they can call somebody who wears a dress from the past racist, then, and this is a woman who's willing to marry a black man, but now she's racist all of a sudden because she wore a dress that was from the Deep South. It represents racism. Well, if that represents racism, then what doesn't from the South? The way people used to dress down in the South, plantation dress or whatever it was. It is absolutely ridiculous the kind of attention this is getting. And the theatrics involved in all this, and the way they've paraded her around in front of everybody, and still, nothing she says will be enough. Her apologies will never be enough. Never be enough. Now, I don't know how she has hurt someone. I don't know what she did that actually damaged someone's life. If a dress... Okay, let me tell you this. If you're a man and a dress makes you cry, you're not a man. That's all I'm going to say about that. If you're afraid of a dress, now, maybe you spent a lot of years as a slave. And so that dress maybe, you know, means something to you. Maybe some plantation owner, his wife, whipped you when she was wearing a dress like that. I can understand that. So if that happened to you, then I understand. If it didn't happen to you, you're just ridiculous. Now let's wade into the real point that I want to get at this point. And this is where I become very, you think I'm unpopular now in what I just said. You're gonna really not like what I'm, well, you're not going to like me after I say this. Our Messiah was very clear about something. He said, if someone offends you, you should not, this is where we get this mixed up. Now, I'm tempted to pull this up. I wish I had it right here with me because I don't have it with me at the moment. I'm going to see if I can pull this up. Hopefully I can pull this up. Oh, yeah, sure. I didn't type it in there right or something. Yeah, here we go. This might be it here. If your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone if he listens to you. This is where it gets real interesting, and it's Matthew 18, 15 through 17. If your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. If he listens to you, you've gained a brother. But if he does not listen, take two or three others, and it goes on and on and on. There's also a point where Jesus was teaching. This is in Matthew 5, 23 and 24. So if you are offering your gift at the altar and there, remember that your brother has something against you. Leave your gift there before the altar and go. First, be reconciled to your brother and then come and offer your gift. In other words, I don't want your gift. It's more important that you go to your brother and make things right. Then you can come back and talk about making your offering to me. Because until then, it's a stench in my nostrils. Now, read this very carefully, because this is where we get it mixed up. I was in a situation where I was in a, I had this little group of friends, and we had this little hobby that we did thing. And one of the, there was some emails getting passed back and forth, and it was this one, you have to understand this one guy's humor, sense of humor. He said something in a letter, in an email. And it was, I totally understood it because it was just the way he's been since he was a kid. I've known him since childhood. That didn't mean anything to me at all. It was bounced right off my back. I understood everything he said. He meant it as a kind of, he's kind of got like a sarcastic stab, kind of a witty kind of sense of humor. And he said something in this email. It was taken wrong by someone's spouse. That person wanted nothing to do with us anymore, but didn't tell us, didn't say a word. Now, this fella happens to be a pastor. His wife is not, of course, but he is. This is not what the scripture says here. It says, if your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. Why would you not, now, and the reason is because they may not even know that they sinned against you. They may not know that you took offense or something that you said offended them or something you did upset them. You may not even know it. So you have to let them know. It's very clear. He puts the burden on the person who was offended. If you simply clam up and don't talk to that person anymore, you're the one who's at fault here. Don't even go before God with an offering. Because you're the one, the other person's going through life and just doesn't even know they've stepped on anybody's toes. You're the one who's got the problem. You get the hang up with your brother. You're the one that's harboring issues. Do you see where I'm going with this? If you don't, let me keep going here and I'll explain it a little bit more in just a moment. If you are offering your gift at the altar and they're there, you're at the altar and you remember that your brother has something against you. You have to know that your brother has something against you. Or that there's and actually that's kind of a poor translation. It's actually that there's aught between you and your brother. In other words, there's dissension between you and your brother. And usually it's because you have something in your heart towards your brother. They may not even know it, brother or sister or whatever it is. You're to take responsibility for presenting that to them, saying, this offended me. Or you did this and it really hurt me. Or, you know, I didn't appreciate it when you stepped on my cat. I suppose it would depend on the cat. But I digress. The issue, I guess, is that where this resides. Now, and I know of some other brothers. I've had also another pastor friend of mine. Same kind of thing. Was very hurt by something I said. And never said anything to me about it. Now, it was kind of a silly thing to be hurt by. It wasn't like a serious thing like I didn't say that wasn't. It was just a comment that I made that kind of made him upset. And it wasn't like he. Now we still talked and we still did. But I found out later that bothered him. He never told me. I had to find out through someone else. And you know what? I didn't say a thing about it. I didn't go to him at all about it. Now I know I probably should, but I'm waiting to see if he will read this scripture and understand what reconciliation is about. If he doesn't, I guarantee you, I will say something. Now, I have not made the statement again since then, and I will not. The statement that I know that he doesn't like, that he kind of was hurt by, and I understand. I understand his feelings. And so it's one of those things where I'm kind of waiting to see if he will have, you know, if he will man up and come to me and say, you know, you said this and it kind of offended me. I'd be happy to say, I'm sorry. And ask for his forgiveness and move on from there. So I'm still giving him that opportunity. However, now, I have been to multiple services, large events, stadiums filled with people. One that comes to mind was 2007, July 7th, 2007. It was called 777. It's a prayer meeting in Tennessee. Stadium filled with about 18,000 people. And there was a big event in the afternoon where they had brought in some Native Americans, some African Americans, you know, any kind of other folks that are considered minorities and the way the church has treated them. And there was this, it was a presentation. It was very, very well done, in fact. Some good representatives from those communities were there. And there was, you know, forgiveness requested, expressed, kind of a healing time. And I typically kind of balk at some of those things, but this was well done. It was actually well done. And it's still a little bit uncomfortable for me because most of the time, offenses happen from institutions. Institutional offense it typically happens by people who are no longer around. Like the whole institution of slavery, the people who instituted it, defended it, fought for it, who owned slaves. In fact, on record, you can look this up. The very first slave owner in this country was a black man. But I digress. The issue, it becomes one of forgiveness becomes much more on a personal level. An institution cannot forgive you. Now, does racism exist beyond slavery? Absolutely. Just ask any old Democrat. I'll tell you. Some of the issues that and I'm not saying there's no racism or discrimination and bigotry within the Republican Party. Don't get me wrong. It resides in the heart of any man. That's where it lives. That's where it's fleshed out. That's where it manifests. And it doesn't matter what color your skin is, folks. I hear this all the time that racism requires some kind of institutional power. No. Okay, if you want to go there, that's fine. But bigotry lives in the heart of a man or a woman. Discrimination is in the heart of a man or a woman. That's where it's fleshed out. And I believe that racism is there as well. It doesn't live in the halls of an empty building, of a building made of stone. It lives in the hearts of people who institute those, facilitate those things. This is why it's very difficult when you start to say that there's systemic racism in a particular community, when the mayor, chief of police, the AG are all black. 90% of the city council, black. And you're going to say that there's systemic racism there. Well, okay. Why would that be happening? Explain that to me, please. Well, they're just implementing the policies that were established by the imperialists, the colonists. This is why they hate the country. They want to tear it down. Principles, founding principles of individual rights for every man. And there's a lot of diseducation in this particular field. So here's what I'm getting at, and this is where I'm going to land on this, and I'm going to try to close the show before people start saying bad things about me. Who is it in this particular situation that we have with racism in this country? Who is it that needs to be forgiven? And who is it that needs to do the forgiving? Because I contend there will be no healing in this country. And there are people out there who don't want healing. Don't get me wrong. Some of the race baiters that are out there make their living by promoting racialism. The Jesse Jacksons, the Al Sharptons, and now the new wave of woke individuals, the BLMs, they feed off of this. They raise tens of millions of dollars on the shakedown of racism and the squeeze that they put on people. So please understand that if we had some real people leading the cause of bringing about healing to our nation, unifying our country, and getting rid of the racial enmity that exists, you would hear them calling for us to forgive each other. It goes both ways. If you have hatred in your heart, and this is where the whole altar thing comes from, Matthew 5, 23 and 24. If you go before God and you have hatred in your heart because of something a brother did to you, or you have hatred in your heart for a brother just because of the color of his skin, either way, God's not interested in your sacrifice. Not interested in your gift, your offering. Relationship is more important to him than anything. The whole reason he bled on the cross. Was for mercy. For mercy on us, to unify us and mend our relationship with him, but also to mend our relationship with each other. Now, there's also some confusing things about grace and mercy. Grace is something that empowers us. We are saved by grace through faith. Grace is sometimes confused here. You do something very gracefully, full of grace. It's an action. It's something that's active, happens. God, in his graceful way, very gracefully poured out mercy upon us on the cross. Do justly, love mercy. Walk humbly before your God. I'm going to leave it right there. We need to experience forgiveness in this nation between ethnic groups. I'm not even going to call it between races because there's one race. It's the human race. But there is a lot of different ethnos. There are a lot of different people groups, tribes. And I'll just say it that way. I recently heard a teaching by some wacko individual who was talking about the time when Jesus was with the disciples. A woman approached him and said, she was asking for her child to be healed. And Jesus said, well, and he said this in front of the disciples, and it was very clear. Is it right to give to the dogs the children's bread. And she said, well, even the dogs eat the crumbs off the master's table. Well, this guy said he was calling her a dog. He was racist. And when she pointed that out to him, when she said, well, even the dogs get to eat the crumbs off the master's table. They fall from the master's table. He realized his racism and he repented and he healed her child. That's not what was going on here, folks. Okay? That is not at all what was going on here. We caught the Messiah in a moment of teaching his disciples something. He was making this statement in front of them. It was a very pointed statement. And it was convicting them. Not him. So be very careful with this kind of thing. Please understand that when you are offended by someone, let them know. Don't just exclude them. Don't just bury it. Unless it's something that really doesn't matter. Maybe it's something you just need to get over. Because it doesn't matter. Because ultimately the relationship means more than just that thing where that person took the last straw out of the container and you're really upset about that. Now I'm not going to talk to them ever again. If it's something silly, just try to get over it. Get over yourself. But that there are cases where things, you know, the way a person treated you needs to be confronted. And maybe you need to have someone help you with that confrontation because maybe it's difficult. That's fine too. Now, it does say to go alone. However, there are circumstances where that may not be possible. That's understandable. So that's what my 2 cents worth on this thing. I think that the community, the African-American community, the people of color, the minorities who feel that they've been oppressed or discriminated against, first of all, need to, on an individual basis, that, you know, if a landlord did something that they think is offensive, they need to talk to him about it. And not yell at him, not scream at him, not get in their face and call him a racist. Just need to say, hey, you did this, and it seems a little bit like you're discriminating against the color of my skin. Is that what's going on here? Or whatever it is that's going on. I know people that don't like some people because they... Look, discrimination happens on every level. Every level. It's not just about skin color. I have known people who reminded me of someone in my childhood that I didn't like. Someone who treated me very poorly. And because that person reminded me of that person, I right away bristled against them. I didn't feel chummy with that person. And the same side of the coin, it's the other side of the coin. I've met people that reminded me of somebody who was a good friend of mine in high school, and for some reason I was instantly kind of connected to them because they reminded me of that person. Some people don't like people with big noses. Some people don't like people with big ears. Some people don't like bald individuals. Or people with long hair, or tattoos, whatever it is. Okay, there are some things that cause us to bristle against people, other individuals. It's just the nature of who we are. And we need to get over that. We need to grow up. We need to grow past it. But it takes time. We need to give each other mercy and be gracious to each other. Give each other some grace in the midst of this. I'll tell you what, I'm going to end with this story. When I was going through high school, there were some kids in high school, in my class, that didn't like me. And it was for a stupid reason, it's a really stupid reason. It was a reason that didn't even exist, but then in their head it did. And I was actually chased one night. I was driving my little Blazer. I had a Chevy Blazer, 72 Chevy Blazer, convertible. Driving home one night. And it was on a weekend. I was out with some friends. We were out, you know, we go cruising in our town. It's a big deal here. And we would be cruising up and down the city, at the town here. And as we were on our way home, and we were out TPing in this area, throwing toilet paper. And we used to throw toilet paper up in the trees and TP people's houses. And that was not a mean thing. That was a thing that, hey, we like you. We're gonna TP you because it's kind of a fun thing to do. We're going to pick on you. So we were out doing some stuff like that, just messing around. Well, I was driving home by myself. And usually everybody piled in the back of my Blazer and we'd go out driving and stuff, drive around. I was on my way home, and these guys who didn't like me, they were waiting for me. They pulled out as I was pulling out from a friend of mine's house. They started following me. They were flashing their lights, trying to get me to stop. Now, earlier that night, I saw them with baseball bats. And there was a bunch of them. There was probably five or six of them. They were trying to get me to pull over. They ended up going around me and trying to stop my truck. I passed them. They stopped in the road, and I went around. I don't know what they were going to do if they ever got a hold of me. I'm pretty sure it wasn't going to be pretty. I ended up doing some maneuvers to out drive them, basically, and got home. I don't think they ever figured out where I lived. And let's just say that was some pretty childish behavior, the whole thing. Caused me to have a certain opinion of those individuals for a long time, for many years after that. When I went to a high school reunion, I think it was our 25th, possibly our 30th, I don't know. Probably 25th. I might have been 30th, I don't know. It was a while. We were old. Bunch of old farts. These people had grown up. And I was extremely glad I had gone to that reunion. I would have probably gone the rest of my life thinking of those people were that way. That was my last memory of them. They had grown up. They didn't apologize. Nobody ever said anything about it. We were kids. I can let it go. But I was glad to see that they were adults and responsible, had kids of their own. It was very healing, even though there was no talk about what happened. But we could talk to each other. And it was genuine. It wasn't some kind of phoniness at all. It was very, very genuine. Talking about life and faith and everything. So it was good. It was a good, very healing time. And that kind of thing can happen as we grow older and wiser, hopefully, and not stupider. So that's kind of the show for the day. I don't have a whole lot more to say. That was a lot. That was, for me, that's about as heavy as it gets here, the old news according to me. And it's my take on the whole racial issue and how we need to, how we're going to, I don't see anything that's happening right now. I don't see the BLM movement bringing about healing in our nation. I see it bringing about more division. And I don't see anyone moving towards greater healing in our nation. I'm just going to say that. That's the problem I have with a lot of what's going on. And I don't see men of faith and pastors of faith rising up with the guts to say what I've said. I don't think what I said was that terrible. I don't think it was that difficult to understand or receive. I'm sure some people won't receive it. Because it flies in the face of everything we're being told right now. So, as we move forward, I don't know that my little show is going to make a difference in the world. But if even just one person hears this, that can make a difference. Let's do that. Go from there. We can get through this. We can bring about some healing in our land. We're humble enough about it. So, I leave you with that. I must go to supper time, because it is 6:09 on Tuesday, March 16th. And this is the news, according to me. And according to everybody else. It's according to everybody. That's all we're going to talk about. Tomorrow's show, we'll be having a show tomorrow morning. I don't think Rabbi Rick's going to be with us. He's kind of busy with some life stuff right now, maybe a couple weeks before he gets back here. But he's a busy, busy man. And we'll go from there. In the meantime, call into the show. Text in 574-742-6748. Get a chance. It's also in the show notes. Subscribe, share, do whatever you can. Thanks, everybody. Have a great night.